Hi, I'm Justine Toe from CPX, and you're listening to the Richard Johnson Lecture Podcast. In this episode, you'll hear Peter Harrison's 2015 lecture titled The End of Faith. Has science made religion redundant? The conflict between science and religion seems entrenched, even inevitable. But is it? Peter Harrison is one of the most important scholars working in the area of science and religion today. He challenges our understanding of what has historically been meant by the concepts of science and religion. You'll also hear Peter reconstructing the true history of their turbulent relations.
The title of the talk, as you can see, is The End of Faith. Has science made religion obsolete? Question mark. Journalists have a little rule called Bettridge's Law that says if you see a headline with a question mark, the answer is always going to be no. So, is this the first photo of the Loch Ness Monster? No, it's not. Did aliens build the pyramids? No. Is the bikini necessary for beach volleyball? No. And you won't have to stretch your imagination too far to see that what I'm going to suggest tonight is that the answer to the question, has science made religion obsolete, is also no. The question, has science made religion obsolete, in one sense is a question of what the facts are. Is it the case that religion has declined? And if so, where has it declined? And if so, what is the cause of the decline of religion? Is it science if it's declined? So it's a slightly complex question. It has a number of elements. And what I'm going to do is to look at a number of those elements this evening. That is to say, is it the case that religion is in decline? That's a factual question, it's a sociological question. And if it's in decline, what might we speculate have been the causes of that decline? And does science play a role? And then I'm going to give you some suggestions about why it's unlikely to be the case, both that religion is in decline and that in those places where it does seem to be in decline, that science is the cause of that. So I'm going to talk about four things. I'm going to talk, first of all, about the nature of the question and the way in which some people who've argued for a tension between science and religion and the inevitability of that tension have necessarily a particular view about what science is and about what religion is. And my suggestion will be that the conflict arises out of the ways in which they're conceiving of science and religion. I'm then going to look at some sociological evidence, so we'll just look at a few facts about whether religion is in decline or not. Then I'm going to look at the history, very briefly, of relations between science and religion. And then finally, I'll say something about why we might think, or where the idea came from, that religion and science are necessarily in conflict. So just so that you get an idea of the kind of view that we're examining tonight, here's something very recent from The Australian. Only a month ago, Philip Adams says, as you can see there, as knowledge advances, God retreats. From the days of Darwin to the age of Hawking, both leading scientists, religion has taken a hammering from science and from atheists. Now, he's an intelligent individual, and yet nonetheless he subscribes to this very common view that I think is fundamentally mistaken. But it's the fact that he articulates this view and the reasons why he articulates it that I want to examine this evening, and also to suggest why I think it's fundamentally wrong. Now, he's not the only one to have this view, and it's been promulgated, I think, most forcefully by this group called the New Atheists. I'm not going to give you an account of all of the thinking of these people, but Richard Dawkins gives us, I think, possibly the paradigmatic version of this. We overlapped for a time at Oxford. He was the Simonyi Professor for the Public Understanding of Science, although he seemed to spend most of his time in that role attacking religion. But here is the view which, in a sense, of which Philip Adams is something of an echo. So religion, he says, is in some sense just bad science. Don't fall for the idea that these are independent things. Historically, and here's the historical claim, historically religion has always attempted to answer the same questions that properly belong to science. And I think this really sums up the essence of the problem here. For people who, like Dawkins, who think that science and religion necessarily must come into conflict, science and religion compete for the same explanatory territory. They're trying to do the same kind of thing. Science, he believes, does it much better than religion. To put it another way, religion is just a primitive form of science. And if you hold that view, there's going to be a certain inevitability about a conflict between science and religion. And if you believe that truth will ultimately triumph over falsity, there's an inevitability that science historically will eventually come to displace religion. But the key thing lies in thinking that science and religion are trying to do the same kind of thing. Sam Harris, who we've already mentioned. Here we have the same kind of line being run. The conflict between science and religion is zero sum. That means there can only be one winner. They can't both be right. And Simon made allusion to this reference in the introduction, this particular view. So I'm just giving you this as just a further example of the common view of the new atheists about how it is that science and religion compete to do the same kind of work, and that conflict as a consequence of that way of understanding science and religion is inevitable. I'm now going to go back in time and give you one last example before I start to suggest what's wrong with this view of things. And this is the view not of one of the new atheists, but of an anthropologist, and the anthropologist who's making the prediction, Anthony Wallace, that religion is destined to die out all over the world as a result of, he argues, the increasing adequacy and diffusion of scientific reasoning. So this is not merely about whether science and religion are in conflict, it's a sociological prediction about a kind of teleological direction of history, that the way history develops is that religion will inevitably decline and that science will take its place. Okay, what is wrong with this picture? That's what I'm going to talk about very briefly. And what is wrong with this picture? I think already people like Sam Harris and Richard Dawkins are energised by these kinds of events that we see here. The Iranian Revolution, which saw a secular modern state supported by the most powerful nation in the world, the US, overthrown by an Islamic revolution. We see the rise of charismatic Christianity in places like Africa and in South America, and in the US, and perhaps less happily, we see fundamentalist reactions against the notion of evolution and the teaching of evolution in schools in particular. So religion, in a sense, has returned, and it's very clear that the predictions that our anthropologist Wallace made in the middle of the last century are clearly false as a prediction. Religion doesn't seem to be going away. But the patterns, nonetheless, I think are interesting. Here's what the sociologists have to say about secularisation. So Peter Berger says, in fact, sociologists in the 20th century thought religion was on the decline. It's now back. And whether you like it or not, the world is more religious than ever before. In terms of the role that science might have played, David Martin says there's no consistent relation between the degree of scientific advance and the profile of a decline in religious beliefs and values. If we look, though, more specifically at the patterns, let's have a look at Europe. Here's the percentage of people in Europe who say they believe there is a God. And what you can see very clearly, there's an interesting move. As you go further north in Europe, people believe less and less in God. Now, if you're a fan of Hippocrates, you might think there's a climatic explanation for this, that atheism is not actually, it doesn't correlate with scientific advance, it correlates with colder temperature. Or, what I suspect is the case, actually, there's a very interesting link between Catholic countries there, with the exception of France, and Protestant countries. But there is a decline in religion in Northern Europe. That's undoubtedly a pattern. Right, so let's not deny that. And it's not clear that that pattern is currently changing. But in terms of science and scientific advance, here's the very interesting counterexample. If you think that science and technology is going to correlate with a decline in religion, the US exception is really the very interesting story here. we've always thought, or sociologists have typically thought of the US as some kind of exception to a general rule that needs to be explained. We know that the US is both the most scientific and technologically advanced country and the most religious country in the Western world. So clearly this is a counterexample to the thesis. And sociologists once thought that the US was an exception that had to be explained, and they're now wondering whether perhaps Northern Europe is the exception that has to be explained. Okay, so there's been the resurgence of religion has made us rethink these fundamental questions about secularization or the decline of religion. The other thing I think that's very important to say is that the idea that religious ideas are in decline is very much at odds with the kinds of things we see in the popular beliefs of individuals. Now, I'm going to stick with the US here, and this is something we know about the US, that in terms of evolutionary theory, not too many people in the US are signing up to that notion, for better or worse. That a significant proportion, usually something like 2/3 of people in the US don't believe in evolution, and about half of these are college educated. Now, what's interesting is it was for a long time thought that this was an example of American exceptionalism. But if we look at the UK, we don't find the same pattern, but we find something that's, in a way, quite similar and thought-provoking, that about 51% of Britons think that evolution alone is not enough to explain how we got here. And I'm not going to let us off the hook. It's only about 25% of Australians think the biblical account of human origins is in competition with the Darwinian account and is to be preferred to the Darwinian account. So my suggestion here is that the idea that even in the most advanced Western countries, scientific ideas have permeated significantly into the population is highly questionable. And just to give you a few more stats, 40% of people in Great Britain think that houses can be haunted. Now, this is not a deep religious conviction, but nonetheless, it's not consistent with a kind of secularisation view. 21% of the people in the US believe in witches. This is really, in a way, quite puzzling. But again, it's not consistent with the idea that scientific rationality has permeated to a great level in these places. Now, this is from a Gallup poll that was conducted, I think, in 2005. Just to show you, we can put Australia into the picture, about 68% of Australians believe in God. Interestingly, only 50% of Australians think that religion is important. So there's a significantly higher number of people who believe in God than believe that religion is important. But 34%, for example, believe in UFOs. About 40% believe in astrology. So that, again, the idea that people like the new atheists have about the permeation of scientific ideas through the culture, I think is deeply misleading. I'll give you one more stat. This is data from the World Values Survey. And for those hard scientists among you, this may not look like a very strong correlation, but that line for social scientists, that's a really significant correlation, that line you see going through the graph there. But what that line shows is a very interesting correlation between countries where people have both a strong religious faith and a faith in the capacity of science to make things better. So the more secular the country, the less religious belief in the country, the less faith there is in science as a force for good. And that's why right down here you have the Netherlands, which is measuring highest for non-belief in religion and highest for scepticism about whether science can deliver goods. And at the top, right up there, you've got Egypt, highest for religiosity and highest for faith in science. If it's the case that science is a cause of a loss of confidence in religion, what you'd expect is that the correlation would be precisely the opposite to what we see in this very interesting World Value Survey. Okay, so all I'm suggesting here is there's no particular argument, I'm just presenting the facts as we know them, that seem to suggest that there's a basic problem with the thesis about science as being a cause of a loss of conviction in religion. Now, that said, there are some countervailing data that I'll give you, and I'll try and give you some suggestions for why this might be the case. But if we look at religious belief among scientists, we do get a very interesting pattern. And this is a survey that was conducted by Ed Larson and his colleague that replicates a study done in the first decade of the 20th century and then again in the 30s. And what it shows is that religious belief is significantly less amongst scientists than it is amongst the general population. And what the repeated studies show is there's not much of a shift in that pattern. Here's another one that's just something very similar. Elaine Eklund is a sociologist at Rice University. He's done a lot of work on the religious beliefs of scientists, and that book is a very interesting one about science versus religion, what scientists really think. And the basic suggestion of the book is that scientists as a whole aren't as religiously sceptical as has often been made out to be the case. Nonetheless, I think that said, Eklund's work still suggests that religious disbelief amongst scientists is higher than that amongst the general population. Now, taken at face value, that might suggest that even if scientific views are not permeating through the population, at a kind of elite level, amongst elite scientists, it is the case that knowledge of science correlates with lack of religious belief. But let me give you just a couple of bits of, again, sociological data that suggests that that's going to be a problematic claim. And this one looks at how religiosity amongst undergraduates shifts as a consequence of the studies that they undertake. I think what's interesting about this data is that the study that is most corrosive of religious belief and practice in colleges is not the hard sciences, but the social sciences and the humanities. And again, what that suggests to me is that it's not the content of the science that tends to correlate with disbelief. You might say at some level it could be tertiary education, but it's significant, I think, that it's the humanities and social sciences that look to be more problematic for religious belief than scientific belief. And if we look at some of the data about the religious affiliations of those who are trained in the various academic disciplines, this again is what we find. So if we forget about undergraduates for a moment and look at the professions, you know, mathematicians are pretty religious as a whole, as are the physicists, and there are interesting reasons for that. As you get into the softer sciences, the mushy biology, right? The dismal science, economics, and then the things that aren't really science at all, sociology, psychology, and anthropology, you find that here we have significant scepticism about religion. So here's the hypothesis that I'm putting to you is that the relevant variable is not training in the sciences, it's something else, and it's something perhaps that's in the humanities and the social sciences. And I'll come back to the social sciences in a moment because there's a historical explanation, I think, for that kind of trend. So bottom line at this point is actually secularisation is not proceeding globally in any way, shape or form. The overall pattern is that religion is growing. There are pockets of secularisation or disbelief. We see that in Northern Europe, and we see it amongst middle-class, educated Western liberals. That's where we see decline in religious commitment. But that doesn't seem, my argument, that doesn't really seem to be connected with the advance of science and technology. Now, a lot more sociological work needs to be done on that. And in fact, my laureate project in part is looking at this kind of question.
We'll be back to the lecture after a short break.
Today, there are over 40 million people trapped in slavery. That's more than ever before in human history. We are International Justice Mission, and we believe we can end slavery in our lifetime. Together with our local partners, RJM rescues and restores victims, brings criminals to justice, and strengthens justice systems. To find out more, visit rjm.org.au. International Justice Mission. Until all are free.
And now, back to the lecture.
So we've looked at sociology. I want to look very briefly at history and to suggest to you that historically, what's interesting is that science and religion have not been in conflict, but on the contrary, that science has actually been grounded in a set of religious presuppositions, and that this is what's made it possible. I'll start with Galileo, and I won't talk too much about the details. Historians of science have gone over the Galileo affair time and time again, and Galileo, of course, is emblematic of what's supposed to be an enduring conflict between science and religion, because as we know, Galileo was condemned by the Inquisition for promoting the Copernican view. All I want to say, and I won't go into the details, although we can do that in Q&A if you like, is that the Galileo case was a remarkable exception to the way in which Catholicism dealt with science okay, firstly. And secondly, that the Galileo affair wasn't really about science and religion at all. It was about a competition between two competing scientific theories, and the church backed the scientific consensus of the time, which turned out to be mistaken or wrong. But what Catholicism did in its condemnation of Galileo was simply to support what the scientific consensus of the period supported. On the more general point, the Catholic Church was a significant supporter of astronomical research for a long, long period of time, hence the use of cathedrals as solar observatories, and as the historian John Heilbronn has put it, the Catholic Church gave more financial and social support to the study of astronomy for the six centuries than any other and probably all other institutions. So the pattern that we see in the past is one of Catholicism supporting science. When we move to the so-called scientific revolution of the 17th century, the key figures in promoting the birth of modern science in the 17th century, people like Robert Boyle and Isaac Newton, are not only committed Christians, but their capacity to interpret nature in a particular way is underpinned by a set of religious presuppositions that they're quite explicit about. So if we take Robert Boyle, he argues that the study of nature is actually an intrinsically religious act. So what motivates Boyle to scientific activity is the fact that he sees it as something that's intrinsically religious, and thinking that science is something that devout religious believers should be interested in. I'm going to skate fairly quickly through this. You can read the books if you want the chapter and verse, but Isaac Newton, you know, ironically referred to by a Newton expert as a 17th century theologian who wrote a few minor works on science. And in fact, if you tally up the words that Newton wrote, he wrote much, much more on religious topics than he ever did on science. Now, the science probably is better science than the religion is good religion, but that doesn't matter. He was certainly a convinced religious believer, and here's his fundamental claim that the universe as we see it could only have come from the counsel of a designing deity. For people like Newton and Boyle, who sought laws of nature in the natural world, their very conception of a law of nature was that it was a command that God had. The way God ran the world was laws of nature. Laws of nature were nothing but God. That's what they were. And the very notion of law was not an analogy. The notion of law was a literal law that God had imposed on the natural world. So laws of nature is a new idea. It starts in the 17th century with the philosopher Descartes, and it's a fundamentally theological idea. So this conception that the intelligibility of nature lies in mathematical laws is initially and originally a theological insight. My Sydney colleague Stephen Gorkroger in this book, The Emergence of Scientific Culture, has put it very well. Sometimes we think that science gets up and running in the early modern period, the 17th century, because it breaks away from religion. It's actually the other way around, that science and religion come together in the 17th century in a unique way, and indeed it's the theological foundations of science that play a key role in getting science up and running, in motivating scientists, and in giving the basic underpinnings, the presuppositions, if you like, that make science possible. These are three books I've written that are essentially about that period and that give some indication of how religion plays a significant role in both the emergence of science, but crucially also in giving science ongoing legitimation, as the sociologists would put it. So, put it another way, lots of cultures have had scientifically brilliant geniuses, but only in the West has science been placed into a central position in the culture, and only in the West has science been valued to the extent that it has. So it's the longevity of science as well as its origin that are key things to explaining why it's present in the West. And what's distinctive about the West is the Christian tradition and the scientific tradition, and it's not that one replaces the other, it's that one makes the other possible. That's the bottom line. Very quickly, I've talked about Galileo, who's regarded as emblematic of conflict, and so of course is Darwin. Is Charles Darwin, universally rejected by religious figures when in 1859 he publishes Origin of Species? No, actually, a number of High Church Anglicans are very much in favour of evolutionary theory. Charles Kingsley is one of them. We know him as author of The Water Babies, but there's his view about evolution. Asa Gray is a Presbyterian botanist who's professor of botany at Harvard University. He's Darwin's great champion in the US, big fan of Darwinism, but says that what Darwinism gives us is a much more theologically sophisticated view of nature. And here are two further examples of religious thinkers supporting Darwinism. All of this then by way of saying that historians of science, many of whom have no religious convictions whatsoever, will tell you that science and religion historically were not in conflict. There was no perennial conflict, and that in fact science and religion had generally positive mutual relations. And here's just a few of the books historians have written that argue basically the idea of science-religion conflict historically is a complete historical myth. The interesting question then is, if historians say there was no perennial battle between science and religion, if there's no overlapping of territories, why is it that some people think it's plausible to argue that today? And I'm going to give you just two very quick examples of why. And one goes back to sociology and the social sciences. Auguste Comte is the father of sociology. He explicitly attempted to make sociology a discipline that would replace religious understandings of human nature. And he has a theory of history, and his theory of history goes like this. We start at a theological stage, we move very quickly through a metaphysical stage, and we end up at a scientific stage. So his sociology has a theory of history, a theory that history will inevitably move in this direction. And this is quite characteristic of sociology of the period. Marx has a similar kind of theory about an inevitability of a certain kind of progress. We also see this in anthropology, very similar move, where this famous work, The Golden Bough, we have the notion of a progressive understanding of history. And my argument is that the new atheists, I won't talk about what's new about them, let me tell you what's old about them. What's old about them is that they rehash this quaint 19th century progressivist understanding of history that sees the human race as moving through successive stages. Okay? They dress it up a little bit, but that's what underpins their understanding of why there's this kind of inevitable progression from science to religion. And I'll just give you quickly two other guys who were important in the 19th century. These two individuals, John Draper and Andrew Dixon White, who first talked about science and religion and conflict in the same book titles. And these guys really invented the story that Galileo epitomised science and religion conflict, that Darwin epitomised science and religion conflict. So I'm going to wrap things up, but what I want to do is I started with some examples of prominent scientists who argued for conflict between science and religion and its inevitability and the fact that they compete for the same territory. I'm now going to give you some examples of equally distinguished scientists. Not that we can just headcount to solve this issue, but I just want to suggest to you that I'm not the only one making this argument. And here's Martin Rees, who's the Astronomer Royal, past president of the Royal Society, one of the most distinguished scientists in the UK. And he's talking here about a book published by Stephen Hawking called The Grand Design, where Stephen Hawking said, look, cosmology now tells us all we need to know about the origins of the universe and we don't need God anymore. And Martin Rees, who is not a religious believer himself, says, I just don't buy that argument. That's just wrong. There's nothing in contemporary cosmology that should give any religious believer, he uses the Archbishop of Canterbury as his example, any reason to worry. As I say, this is from one of Britain's most distinguished cosmologists who is not himself a religious believer, but doesn't buy the idea that his colleague, his Cambridge colleague, Stephen Hawking, is putting out about conflict between science and religion. Richard Dawkins' foe in evolutionary battles, Stephen Jay Gould, the distinguished naturalist at Harvard, who famously argues that science and religion occupy independent spheres. To think that science and religion are in conflict or that science will displace religion, for him, is like thinking that ballet will displace religion. They're not attempting to do the same kinds of things. You're making a kind of category error if you think that these things are about the same stuff. And Stephen Jay Gould is not a religious believer either, of course. But I will give you some religious believers. And famously, I think we know about John Polkinghorne. And Polkinghorne wants to argue that one of the reasons we need science and religion is precisely because they do different things. They do give us different perspectives on the world. And that the scientific perspective by itself is an impoverished and insufficient view of the world. For all its great value, it leaves a lot out. And it's religion that gives us what is left, okay? Or religion, and we could say philosophy perhaps as well, attempts to ask fundamental questions about meaning and value and purpose that science could never answer. Francis Collins, who was head of the Human Genome Project and now running, actually it's the NIH now, the National Institutes for Health, which is the largest scientific research organisation in the world. We know he was originally an atheist and became a Christian, but he's not buying the conflict argument. And my last exemplar, Simon Conway Morris from the biological sciences. Simon Conway Morris was a student of Stephen Jay Gould, worked on the Burgess Shale, has a very interesting view about evolution. But again, what he wants to say is Darwinism is not a complete explanation of everything, and that what we get from a religious perspective is something that science simply cannot provide. So the conclusion: has science made religion obsolete? For most of history, science and religion have not been in conflict. If we look at the specific patterns of secularisation in the world, we do see that some places in the industrialised West do seem to be increasingly non-religious, but that pattern's not universal, nor is it clear that it's unidirectional or it's irreversible. Where we do see religious decline having taken place, it's by no means clear that science is the cause of that. And then moving on to religious belief amongst scientists, it is significantly lower than in the general population, but what's significant about these individuals is that the humanities and the social sciences seem to be more, I should say, corrosive there, or erosive of religious belief, which suggests that science is not the key variable. And to wrap up, not the usual spokesperson for a conclusion about science, religion, conflict, but Charles Darwin, and Darwin was never an atheist, despite what you may hear. It's possible to be an evolutionist and a theist, and says Darwin, I don't think that science and religion should be in conflict. And that's a sentiment that, in conclusion, I fully endorse. Thank you.
Listening to the 2015 Richard Johnson Lecture delivered by Peter Harrison. Peter is currently an Australian Laureate Fellow at the University of Queensland. Before taking up that post, he was the Idrios Professor of Science and Religion at the University of Oxford. He's published extensively in the area of intellectual history, with a focus on the historical interactions between science and religion. He's also authored or edited 6 books, including The Territories of Science and Religion. Please also check out our other podcast, Life and Faith, a weekly conversation about the beauty and complexity of belief in the 21st century. You can find that wherever you get your podcasts. And if you'd like to know more about CPX, our website is publicchristianity.org.